Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at @Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton. You can find him at @MistoChrisDefo, and the Locked On Jaguars handle at Locked On Jaguars, where we're pushing all of our work from the site in these podcasts. If you haven't heard it by now, we're doing a lot of roster breakdown stuff. Our past couple episodes have been on the rest of the offense, most recently tight end, as well as a really cool interview that I got to do with Dalton Risner out of Kansas State, offensive lineman that's getting touted as a first-round pick after his great Senior Bowl. Make sure to check out that interview if you haven't already. It went up Tuesday morning. It was fantastic. Dalton's definitely a high-character guy that I'm wishing the best for, and I'm getting a little bit more comfortable with talking about him as a potential Jaguars pick at number 7 overall, so long as they don't draft a quarterback there, which I'm still, like, I'm not saying that I would go Risner over a quarterback, and I would absolutely try and move up for Haskins. But as I proposed in the tight end episode, in a hypothetical world, the Jaguars either move a pick or do whatever they can to get Nick Foles, or they just somehow mess up so badly and so Jaguarsy that they don't get their quarterback. And at 7, I would consider Risner. He's a guy that we're going to talk about later in the show. But great interview. Make sure to check it out. We're going to go ahead and break down the offensive line group now. Same format as we've been doing. The expectation for the group going into the 2018 season. What actually happened, and boy, did a lot happen. And what the team needs to do with the position group going forward. So, Chris, how excited were you for this Jaguars offensive line group going into the year, considering they had your guy, the guy you had been calling for a long time for them to go after in free agency, the highest paid guard in NFL history, Andrew Norwell?
Highest paid guard in NFL history for like a week,
and then, yeah.
But no, I mean,
I had to say it.
I think Andrew Norwell had a much better season before going on IR than a lot of the fans wanted to credit. I think they expected a guy like Norwell to make the all five positions better, when that's just not possible, when everybody around you is either a second or third string or just playing awful. But to what he could do, I think Andrew Norwell did a far better job than what fans give credit for. So that's my first take right there. Kind of an unfair, really, season to judge Andrew Norwell all around, though. This entire O-line, this was kind of an anomaly. Most years, you're not going to get your entire offensive line, except for your right guard and AJ Cann, who was already your weakest link going in, to not be on IR or have several games missed due to injuries. So very unfortunate for the Lightning there, but Andrew Norwell, I
think.
The Jaguars, sorry. I'm always thinking of hockey, guys. It's already the off season, so it's hockey season. But the Jaguars, correct sport at this time, they need to still, I think, go for deeper O-line depth. Maybe across all the positions, because obviously it was needed and you could tell that the depth was not very good there. So the Jaguars definitely need to do that. And Norwell, I still have high hopes for him. I think he'll be worth the money in the end. Now, granted, you're probably not going to get he's going to play well, but it's always going to kind of have that asterisk because you did get him in free agency and you tend to overpay guys in free agency. So obviously there's going to be guys around the league where it's like, well, they're only paying him this much and he's playing this good. That's going to always happen, especially on rookie deals. So you kind of have to factor that in. But for what they pay him, I think he's going to put out for the rest of his career, or until obviously the Jags make those financial decisions down the road to cut or restructure. But I think he's still going to be a worthwhile investment.
I definitely agree, and I think losing Cam so early and a guy he was just building chemistry with on the left side probably hurt him the most out of any injury. But I was very optimistic when they brought him in. I think that there was some rough patches with penalties at the start of the year that he got over with, and I thought he played really well. And he was known as a better pass protector coming in, but he was a guy that, you know, he was run blocking really well for when they needed him to. Obviously, the running back position itself just didn't pan out the way they wanted it to. But was excited for him. Was really excited for Cam Robinson's growth, because I thought he played very well his rookie year, other than when he was dealing with an injury for a couple weeks span. People didn't want to admit to it. He was not playing well, but it was because he was playing through injury. Just I didn't understand why people couldn't accept that at the time, but whatever. That's in the past now. Linder, being a homegrown talent, just want to see him stay healthy, man. And people were definitely optimistic he would on the new contract and how well he played in the 2017 season. AJ Cann, there was a lot of optimism there. Guy heading into the fourth year of his deal, a prove it year, what was said to be a great offseason training with Duke Mayweather or whatever his last name is, offensive line guru, quote unquote. And Jeremy Parnell, if he could stay healthy, I mean, in 2017, he had a pretty good rebound season compared to his 2016 year. I think that you had a very good looking offensive line group heading in that you just wanted to be sure could stay healthy. And they showed in the preseason, they looked a lot better. There were holes opening left and right. I mean, last year, Bortles was one of the lesser sacked quarterbacks in the NFL, 2017, that is. And there, I mean, there was a sense of real optimism behind this offensive line, but the depth, I can't say the depth provided that much optimism in comparison. And I think that's something that we're going to talk about in our next segment when we break down everything that actually happened to the Jaguars offensive line. Today's episode of Locked On Jaguars is brought to you by A1 Sliders. Are you one of hundreds of coastal Northeast Florida homeowners who struggle every day to open and close your sliding glass door? Why spend all the money it takes to replace your sliding glass door when Tony and the gang at A1 Sliders could save you money and repair your door for you? A1 Sliders is licensed and insured. They offer free estimates, upfront pricing, and will help you save on heating and cooling costs in your home from leaky sliding glass doors. And at A1, your schedule comes first. A1 Sliders is a fan of the Locked On Jaguars podcast, and in partnering with us, they will give you $25 off of any repair you order, no limit. Just mention Locked On Jaguars before getting your repairs done. Call A1 Sliders now for your free sliding glass door repair estimate at 386-538-6835, or check out their website at www.a1sliders.com. That's 386-538-6835. And www.a1sliders.com. And don't forget to mention Locked On Jaguars for $25 off of any repair you order. A1 Sliders, licensed and insured, LLC, covers the Jacksonville area from Fernandina Beach through New Smyrna Beach, based out of Palm Coast, Florida. Contact for more details on location and any questions you may have. So we'll start with the left tackle position. It took a whole game and a half to lose Cam Robinson to injury, so we couldn't see how much growth there really was there. And that just was a derailment to the offensive line. They started going down like dominoes.
Yeah, and an unfortunate game of dominoes, because that is, especially with an offense that wasn't very potent in all aspects. Now, last or 2 years ago, the running game kind of was, but that was to the O-line. That's the one position group you do not want to see get hurt, is your O-line, because they make everything work. They are your... the guys that are keeping your quarterback upright, they're the guys that are opening up holes for your running backs. They are the core part of any offense, and you need them to be performing, and you need them to be healthy to have a functional offense. And we saw in the Super Bowl how the Rams O-line was good all year, but man, when they collapsed against that Patriots D-line, the Rams offense could go nowhere. Goff couldn't hold the ball for more than 2 or 3 seconds before being under duress. Running backs couldn't get open. So I think that's just how important the offensive line is. And the Jaguars have paid some serious money to these guys. Andrew Norwell, he's expected to make $16 million this year. But actually, when looking at the financials, the Jaguars actually aren't paying... Well, I mean, they're paying a lot of money for these guys, but... They're actually, you know, it's a pretty... They have the 17th highest paid collective offensive line in the league going into next year. So if they're able to perform to how they were 2 years ago, I think they might actually be kind of leaning at almost bargain style of play. Because if you're paying them 17th O-line money, but they're playing top 10, you're starting to get into that, you know, better value than what you're paying for, obviously. Andrew Norwell... Obviously, that big contract. But going down the line, I mean, you have Jeremy Parnell, Brandon Linder. Brandon Linder, you're only paying him. His cap number for 2019 is only $5.5 million. So I didn't realize it was that low. I thought it would have been a little higher. To be honest, I thought it was going to be like closer to like 8 or 9. So O-line-wise, Because, I mean, you're paying Cam Robinson under $2 million. You don't have a right guard in AJ Cann. Jeremy right. Parnell's not going to be there. So really your only money that's locked up is 5.5 to Linder, another 2 to Cam Robinson. So that's 7, and then 16 to Andrew Norwell. So right now it's $23 million to 3 of your offensive line guys. So right guard and right tackle, you get rookies, or Will Richardson come in and you're paying Will Richardson $720,000 next year. You could be having a pretty good cheap O-line moving forward. So just kind of a little cap insight for there. And we were kind of talking about how homegrown players, with Jeremy Parnell gone, you now, and you have, if you have Will Richardson and a rookie come in, that's 4 out of your 5 O-line that are homegrown. So just something to look at. It seems like a lot of their signings have been O-line, but those guys are starting to kind of fade away, and you're starting to get to that homegrown that you want for pretty manageable deals, especially with Cam being under like $3 million per year for the next 2 or 3 years. Your right tackle, right guard positions, unless they go out in free agency and get starters there, you're going to have them under $4 million for the next 4 years. They're starting to get some pretty good cap value for their bang for their buck in the O-line.
Now, we do definitely want them to address right guard. Right tackle, I'm confident in their plan with Will Richardson. Obviously, you believe it when you see it with a fourth rounder like that. But I believe that they fully intend on him being the right tackle. I believe this past year was a true redshirt season for him. I've said that for a very long time. That as soon as he got a little bit nicked up from injury in practice, despite not playing any snaps at all, they took advantage and got him on IR. Because people don't realize this, but when you're on IR, like, you can still practice. Josh Wells was practicing when he was on IR. That's something that you can do. It's definitely a lot more limited, but it's not like you're not there. So they wanted to bring him along slowly. As soon as, you know, Parnell was showing some injury issues, the offense was starting to really, you know, deteriorate on the offensive line, I guess I should say. They took advantage of getting him on IR, so they didn't stunt his development at all. So I do believe that that was their plan, and I think that they're going to bring him into right tackle next year. Whether you keep Parnell or not, obviously you want to clear that cap, but you probably want to have someone there behind him that's somewhat seasoned or knowledgeable. You could also go with drafting, you know, a right tackle early on and saying, you know what, like, we just want to bolster our offensive line and make Richardson our swing guy. But I think they will want to start him. But we'll address both of those situations later. They want to address depth. No way around it. Oh, right guard too, if I didn't mention that before. But depth, no way around it. At the end of the year, they were starting their fourth string left tackle after Cam went down, Wells went down, and Walker went down. Then they started Flowers at left tackle. At left guard, they were starting, what was it? Was it Chris Reed? Maybe.
There were so many combinations.
Right, but I'm trying to actually put it together when it was all said and no, it was Patrick Omame. So I couldn't even remember that. It was Omame, so the third string left guard, because Chris Reed was the second string, and I'm pretty sure he got hurt at one point. Second string center. First string right guard, who was the weakest link on the entire offensive line to start the year. And I believe third string or fourth string right tackle, because it was Parnell, and you'd probably still classify Wells as the second there because he was the swing. I think Brandon Thomas had more roster time than Corey Robinson, so you'd technically call Robinson the fourth. So, like, 2 fourth stringers, a third stringer, a second stringer, and your weakest starter. So there's no way that they're going to just hold on to this type of depth that they have. Like, they've got to readdress it with some legit talent and guys that can stay healthy. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of those options, some of the guys that they can do plug in at starter, as well as what they can do with the depth. So, like we said in the previous podcast and earlier in this show, if they can't go quarterback at 7, I wouldn't be against Dalton Risner or Cody Ford or Jawan Taylor out of Florida, 2 right tackles. If you just want to purely go, hey, we need a guy on the right side to fix that up, play healthy and play young so they're a lot cheaper, they could abandon the Richardson plan, make him the swing, and bring in one of those guys, or maybe even move Risner to right guard, something like that. But ultimately, they want to get cheaper. They want to get a new starter at right guard. They should have a new starter at right tackle, but I wouldn't be against them bringing in a new one. And depth. So offensive line is going to be really key to this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that we were kind of preaching as the season went on, is this offseason, they're going to need to address depth, and they're going to need to address it hard. Now, granted, you can only do that so much with, obviously, limited cap space, but they obviously, a lot of the guys they had in-house weren't it. We might finally see the end of the Josh Wells experiment. I thought that was going to be last year. It wasn't. He's probably gone. I actually am kind of an advocate for keeping Eric Flowers. I think you're going to be able to retain him for cheap, and I thought he did a decent enough job as he could as a stopgap during the O-line plague of the Jaguars. So I think Eric Flowers, if I had to put money on him coming back, I would put money on that, because I think he did a serviceable job. He's going to be cheap. He'll have a year under his belt now. Can kind of swing. We saw him go to left tackle, right tackle, whatnot. So I think they're definitely going to keep him. But yeah, you definitely got to draft some guys. Whether they do like Will Richardson, I honestly can't say they do or don't. He could have very well been a red shirt. We don't know that. But Dalton Reisner is a guy that is going to be a very good player in this league. And I might even say great. I think he's going to, once he gets his chance to start, whether that be day one or whatever, I think he's going to have a lot of Pro Bowls in his future, and I think he's going to be a top, you know, very quickly in his career, a top 10 to 15 tackle. So, very high regards for him. Talking to him, very well-spoken, well-mannered. If you didn't listen to the interview, be sure to do that, because he does not disappoint. He knows his role as an offensive lineman. He wants to play right tackle, but he's very aware of how this league goes. If a coach wants to put him at right guard, he will more than happy to play right guard. He has preached the importance of playing center. He will play that if need be, because he knows that the center is the most important part of an entire offense. Without the center, the play doesn't go anywhere. So he understands the fundamentals of, you know, each position's important, and I think that's really, if you're, especially if you take him at seven, that's something that you want your offensive lineman or whoever you're taking to know, their importance of them being versatile and then obviously them playing at a high level. So something definitely there. Cody Ford, he has a mean streak in him. I would love to see him at right tackle. I think he's going to put a lot of guys on their back, especially if they continue to want to kind of run this power run scheme, but hopefully they incorporate more pass and whatnot into it. But if they continue to kind of want to have that as kind of their identity, Cody Ford, I think, fits that perfectly.
And Jawan Taylor's a guy that's really rising. Florida Gator. I can't say I watched a ton of him, but I've seen all the highlight clips, and he plays with great feet. He can be violent as well. Draft circles are getting really high on him out of Florida, so he's one of your guys, I'd have to say, even if you don't know a ton about him. Chris, it's all right. I wouldn't watch right tackles at Florida, or Florida for that matter. But no, I definitely think that they're also going to want to go after someone who's durable. Everyone should be durable. Everyone on that's like, they should have like a threshold, and you need to have started however many games in a row with like little to no injury history whatsoever. Chris Lindstrom, my draft crush for the Jaguars at right guard, has started 51 straight games going back to his freshman year. Little bit of right tackle, but mainly right guard. I don't see him switching to anything other than right guard in the NFL. If he's there at 38, I take him in a heartbeat. AJ Cann's replacement, guy that I think he's great. I think he's a 10-year starter, plug and play. Not Quentin Nelson good, because I don't think he's as athletic or as polished in pass protection. But I think he's got great intangibles. I think he's a guy that can pass protect very well, with just a little bit more you want to see out of him, landing his anchor and his punch. Fantastic run blocker. Great combo blocker, guy that's really there mentally, has a connection to the team in Chris Snee, who's an assistant coach and scout, as well as Tom Coughlin's son-in-law. So definitely a connection there. Reisner's another. And then to the later rounds, you know, I admittedly don't know much about the offensive lineman later on. If they were to go right guard early and want to add another body at right tackle, I think Ole Udoh out of Elon is a guy that's just an absolute monster. 6'5 3/4. 327. At one point, weighed in at 384 in college. There was a great story out on him for that. The Athletic, he essentially went to school on a football scholarship just to get a medical degree to follow in his parents' footsteps. NFL came calling, and he lost a ton of weight in a very short amount of time. Has a goal of being 320 at the combine. Incredibly lengthy. Plays with a mean streak. Definitely a project guy. He's going day three. He's got a lot to refine in his game, but I think he's a dude that's the perfect type of project as a swing right tackle, depth guy. Eventually, like in the very long term, maybe a starter, but not soon at all out the gate. But he's the type of guy that you add for depth purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they kind of address whether they want to go right tackle or right guard. It's all dependent on how they view Will Richardson. If they believe that he's not the guy at either position, then it'll be interesting to see how early and when they take the right guard or right tackle. And if they do like Will Richardson, do they like him at tackle? Do they like him at guard? And then so it's going to be really interesting to see how they attack this, especially with free agency. You don't have a whole lot of money to spend, so it'll be definitely interesting to see how they kind of address that.
Yeah, 100%. I think you also take advantage of some of your priority undrafted spots and just add like as many offensive linemen as you can just to have guys in there competing.
Yeah.
Because I don't use much of those guys, those spots on defense. I replace them with offensive line.
Marone preaches competition. So maybe if you have a few guys that you're not sure, let them decide for you through training camp and stuff. Because
right.
Marone obviously has never been, you know, traditional to keeping guys at one position. If he thinks this five is the best combination, whether you're putting a natural right tackle at left guard or whatever, he's going to do whatever it takes to put the best five in O-line out
which
there.
Which I don't necessarily agree with, but there's a reason he's a head coach and I'm not.
Well, but, I mean, yeah, you could be a head coach if you were to try, like, taking Sean McVay's youngest head coach title.
I mean, I could just go and shake Sean McVay's hand and then become an NFL head coach at 20 years old. But I think that should just about do it for us here. Like I said earlier, if you haven't checked out the Dalton Risner interview, I'd get on that. Really great guy. Great interview. Glad to have him on. And be sure to stick around. Later in the week, we're going to be switching sides to the defensive position breakdown. We're going to go defensive line, linebackers, secondary, and we're even going to give you guys a special teams episode at one point. Chris's favorite. I might let him solo that one.
Thanks.
Pretty much it'll just be like three segments that are all like a second long. The first one is Pay. The second one is Josh. The third one is Lambo.
Not arguing it.
No, I'm really not either. But that's it for now. Make sure to stick around. Subscribe anywhere you can listen to podcasts at Locked On Jaguars.